Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for two really stimulating discussions of the idea of strategic culture. I think we've had a really impressive overview of both the intellectual genealogies of the concept through the political science literatures and also a very impressive effort to think about the ways in which culture can be used to understand the world in a way that connects both to policy and to particular understandings of threat. So I'm quite pleased with working as an anthropologist with this idea that culture has come back into the equation. It is, of course, you know, the reason for our discipline and becomes the key term by which we kind of orchestrate our disciplinary knowledge. I would say that, you know, my contribution to a conversation like this is a little bit different in that my background is working within the U.S. on the development of ideas about nuclear technologies, and particularly working on ideas about threat and community relations within the U.S. So I've spent much of the last decade working around Los Alamos and looking not only at how the end of the Cold War affected internal debates within the laboratory about nuclear threat and the future of nuclear weapons science, but also looking at a variety of communities that were non-technical and activists and otherwise around the laboratory that spent much of the last decade coming to a new assessment of what the national security project within the laboratory had been. And so I come at this idea of strategic culture from a perspective of proliferating that concept. And I think one of the things that I would initially point to as something that we could talk about as a group is the idea that there is one strategic culture, maybe something that is an overly ambitious reading of the value of that concept. It seems to me that one of the ways we can think about that is the movement between different forms of expertise in the production of knowledge and the evaluation of threat and what the processes are by which those different kinds of expertise come together to form an idea about how to proceed in the world. And I think there's actually a very interesting connection here to a series of debates within the science studies literatures on how different kinds of technical expertise can come together in terms of any large-scale scientific project to communicate with each other across disciplinary knowledges, across ambitions and designs. And so there's a interesting body of literature that talks about the communicative techniques that allows different kinds of experts to talk to one another, developments of different kinds of lingua francas that allow people with very different kinds of orientations towards the future and towards knowledge and towards threat in particular to communicate across their different levels of expertise. I think one area that we can locate this in is in the concept of the weapon of mass destruction right now, which links people across a great variety of different political persuasions, different kinds of expertise. But I would suggest also that one of the last slides that we saw that suggested that scriptural, fatalistic issues of naivete, demonology, and messianic status, that it's likely that those kinds of questions in terms of interrogating any particular nation state are likely to always be present in one configuration or another. And so the question I would bring to this is how would we distinguish one of those elements as more dominant than another in any given moment? And I think this is where another distinction might be useful, and that is separating out the kinds of concerns that end up turning into policy questions and the kinds of movements within a national debate that are about mobilizing populations. And I think in my own terminology, I would think about this as the difference between a national culture and a policy debate around any particular kind of security concerns. And we can certainly look at the history of the United States on this and come up with many, many examples. I mean, one of the great inventions of the early Cold War moment was the idea that nuclear weapons and nuclear ideas about nuclear threat would be not only a means of coordinating U.S. Attitudes towards the world that would come up with a whole global strategy of containment, but that also it would become the basis for building U.S. institutions through the elaboration of a military-industrial project at home that came to really be the engine of American modernity and the engine of American science. So how we would separate out, in terms of thinking about a strategic culture, the internal dimensions within a nation state of the kinds of concerns that mobilizes a population to support a particular government agenda, and how that government might then look out into the world and think about engaging other states and other actors through defense and other kinds of strategies, I think those things can be productively kept separate, or at least that linkage can be useful to think about in contradistinction to one another. The other point that I wanted to bring to the conversation was, again, this idea of proliferating notions of expertise, and that within any kind of security debate, however it's framed, I think there's a fundamental concern, or from an anthropological perspective, there's an approach that can be used that suggests that what constitutes a statement about security or insecurity in many cases is the production of a great deal of separate kind of disciplinary projects, separate ideological projects, and that being able to make some distinctions at that level can be quite useful as well. And when I was thinking about, you know, what kind of remarks I might bring to this, I was thinking about how certain events in the U.S. over the last 100 years could be brought to a discussion of security culture. And I was thinking particularly about an event that involved the use of a weapon of mass destruction that was perceived to be a terrorist event at the time, that created a immediate transformation of a security culture into a counter-terrorist formation, that involved a orchestration of a large-scale media campaign around issues of insecurity and threat, and that was mobilized into a large-scale national debate using new technologies of mass media. And I'm thinking, of course, about the Haymarket crisis of 1886, right? And the idea that an unknown terrorist used a new weapon of mass destruction, a stick of dynamite, into a crowd. No one has ever been able to determine who, in fact, lit the fuse on that piece of dynamite. But nonetheless, many of the cultural attributes of our current national security culture can be seen in its early form in reactions to Haymarket. There was a large-scale effort to create a counter-terrorism project within the city of Chicago, a use of covert agents linking members of the police with members of the elite classes here. There was a linkage between the economic interests of anarchists and labor unions, both here and abroad. And we can see that also the new technology of dynamite was absolutely crucial to the construction of this as a particular kind of security problem. So I very much am a follower of this idea that the weapon of mass destruction has a particular power in terms of security debates and security knowledge. But I think that it's also really crucial that alongside asking these questions of other countries and other organizations, that these questions be addressed here at home in terms of our framing devices for how we think about security and insecurity and what kinds of collective mobilizations are appropriate to deal with particular kinds of threats. So that's a long preamble. But perhaps we could we can open this up for general conversation. I think that the two presentations are complementary in a really lovely degree in terms of mapping the importance of culture and also how difficult it is to get a real handle on what this term means in any way that can be attached directly to policy or directly to predictive capabilities. When we think about the history of anthropology, we think about people who have spent many years in locales learning nuanced forms of local language, culture, ideologies. And if I were to ask in my department, you know, how many people felt they had predictive capability for the communities that they've spent their lives studying, I'm not sure what the answer to that would be. I suspect that it would be much higher when we get into the level of talking about particular kinds of expertise and particular kinds of expert knowledge that are framed in a much more specific kind of domain. The relationship between culture and everyday life is such a diffuse set of interests and is so complicated that really I think distilling it down to a question of expert culture becomes one way of handling that complexity. But with that, maybe we can open this up for a general conversation about the important, if difficult, role of culture in imagining and reacting to threat.